Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, live in the green space today. You can watch streaming video of the show if you'd like at WNYC.org or on the WNYC Facebook page. And we've talked a lot about history today, including its legacy for today's world and potentially tomorrow's. Many people in the audience may or may not know that today is Juneteenth, the day we commemorate the abolition of slavery. On June 19th, 1865, 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, 250,000 black Texans were among the final enslaved African Americans to learn of their freedom. The news was delivered by Union Army General and New Yorker Gordon Granger. So June 19th, is one of the most monumental events in American history. But while 43 states recognize Juneteenth, it's only an official holiday in the state of Texas. In most places, it's celebrated informally, if at all, and many people are unaware of what Juneteenth celebrates or even that it's a thing. And it begs the question of why, and yet our understanding of the legacy of slavery also seems to beg for a revised or evolving understanding of Juneteenth even today. So here to discuss Juneteenth are Dr. Cheryl Wilson. She is a former director of the African Burial Ground Project in Lower Manhattan, and also historian Kenneth C. Davis, who is the author of Don't Know Much About History and the whole series of Don't Know Much About books. Dr. Wilson, Ken Davis, welcome to the Green Space.
Thank you.
And Ken, you have written, and I know you're both presenting later at the African Burial Ground, you've written that Juneteenth remains largely unacknowledged on America's calendar and that it's a hidden history. Can you elaborate a little bit and discuss why you think so much of this history has been lost?
Well, 50 years ago, Brian, the Kerner Commission said we were moving towards a nation, two nations, one black, one white, separate, unequal. We've had two histories for a very long time, one black, one white, separate and unequal, and Juneteenth is a perfect example of that. It is a day that holds tremendous meaning in the African-American community, especially of an earlier generation, and particularly in the South, because this was a tradition that was lost. Just to recap, General Granger entered Galveston, Texas in June 1865. He brought with him 1,800 Union troops. The war had ended, obviously, a few months earlier in April of 1865. Among those 1,800 troops were U.S. colored troops, and the sight of black men in blue uniforms carrying guns was shocking to both the white and black Texans of that time. And Granger makes this announcement from a balcony in Galveston on June 19th, and it's met with shock, extraordinary jubilation, and almost immediately it becomes a day of celebration the following year, Juneteenth, this portmanteau of June and 19th. So it is a holiday that resonated throughout the African-American community. Isabel Wilkerson writes about how it traveled north during the Great Migration, and then during the Civil Rights era was more or less forgotten. But it is a day that is a fulfillment. It's the other Independence Day that really brings to conclusion what 4th of July means to most Americans.
And Dr. Wilson, you've noted that Juneteenth is now increasingly celebrated in different spots around the world, meaning including outside the United States?
Absolutely. And I think that is because as African Americans, we've taken Juneteenth to other places. Places where there are U.S. military bases in particular, there are celebrations of Juneteenth. In South Korea, that is the case. There have been celebrations in Japan as well as in Paris. Honduras, a number of places. We often think about how when we go someplace, we're affected by being in that place. But as African Americans, as others, when we go someplace, other people are affected by us. Now, those are organizations that are have organized Juneteenth celebrations, but there are also individuals, teachers in places like Shanghai and in Germany that have noted, at least on Juneteenth.com, that they have taken an interest in teaching their classes. So ultimately, we don't know what the outcome of that will be, but it is spreading and becoming more commonly known outside of the United States than it has been.
Now, reckoning with a past that some people would prefer to forget is also the subject of a powerful episode that many of you may have heard from WNYC's On the Media. In the episode just a couple of weeks ago, they visited the Legacy Museum and National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, which honors the victims of American lynching. Here is 38 seconds of what the founder of that memorial, Brian Stevenson, had to say.
I hear people talking about the civil rights movement, and it's starting to sound like a three-day carnival. On day one, Rosa Parks didn't give up her seat on a bus. On day two, Dr. King led a march on Washington. And on day three, we passed these laws and racism was over. And I knew we were in trouble when I saw state tourism agencies taking out ads and civil rights memorial books saying things like, in 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King partnered with the people of Alabama to create a better future. Literally the language that is used. If you think polio is just like a cold, then you're not committed to creating a polio vaccination.
Brian Stevenson, on that very powerful episode of OTM, which I recommend to everybody, called The Worst Thing We Have Ever Done. And Dr. Wilson, in the context of Juneteenth, hearing Brian Stevenson, maybe you want to think for a minute about this idea of how not being in touch with history can create problems today.
Well, history is obviously very circular. 25 years ago, when the African burial ground was rediscovered, because there were people who knew about it previously, my job in particular, along with a number of other people, including 350 volunteers from 41 states, were spreading the word about the knowledge of slavery in the North. One of the major misconceptions that people today still have is that slavery in America was confined to the South, to Southern states, to Southern colonies, when in fact it's very clearly and very clearly overlooked that slavery is a part of the history of each of the original 13 colonies. New York City, in particular, in the 1700s, it is believed to have had the second largest enslaved African population of any place in colonial America, second only to Charleston, South Carolina. Now, as educated people, well-informed people, if we don't know that, that's a problem. As the saying goes, and I remember who said it, if we don't know that history, we are bound to repeat it. And even today, I meet people after the battle for the recognition of the African burial ground, which is now a national monument, who say, oh, the African burial ground, what's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to play another clip from that episode of On the Media that goes to this, and we're going to skip ahead, control room, to clip three. This is from an interview on that program with Peter Weisenberger, a newspaper editor in Berlin, about how Germany memorializes the Holocaust.
The controversial thing is about it that once you start, you're never going to be done. So there's no such thing as dealing with it and then finally having dealt with it. And I think this is what makes people so afraid to start dealing with history at all. There's no point in which we can say, okay, we're done now. This is always going to be what happened. There's always going to have been millions of people that were killed in a fascist, racist killing machinery and a whole society of bystanders. And it's much easier to sort of compartmentalize it and be outraged as somebody puts a large monument right in the middle of your capital. I mean, right-wing people now are addressing it as a wound of shame that's in the middle of our capital.
The Holocaust Memorial.
The Holocaust Memorial. Because they want history, especially the history of Germany, to be something where there's this thing that happened, but that's in the past. We strayed off our path there. But I believe that it's more important to acknowledge that this part of your history makes up the organism of your society and something that is always going to be tearing on you. And this is what a lot of people feel like can't be asked of them, to always feel like there's something internally wrong with the way that their society was created.
Peter Weisenberger, newspaper editor in Berlin, with Brooke Gladstone on the Worst Thing We've Ever Done episode of On the Media a couple of weeks ago. That's tough stuff. Ken, how do you relate to it as a historian?
Well, I was recently at the Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., this fabulous new location, which, of course, lies in the shadow of the Washington Monument. For most of the past 200 years, we had a story of George Washington as the perfect man, the indispensable man, and we left out the other half of the story, which is that he was a slaveholder and that his power as president came from his slaveholding, and that's one of the reasons I wrote In the Shadow of Liberty about the hidden history of slavery and its relationship to presidents, and focused on five people who were enslaved by presidents, including Washington, because we have left this part of the story out. Now, we have to bring it into balance. I think there's been some reckoning with the fact that there is a Museum of African American History and Culture. There is a Museum of Lynching now in Alabama. So it's the reckoning over Confederate statues is part of it, but we are also experiencing this incredible pushback from that right now. So we are at this, you know, I don't know if it's a pendulum swing moment, but we're certainly in a very tense moment between these two obviously opposing viewpoints.
Dr. Wilson, what are you thinking?
Well, it seems to me that we have to keep repeating the facts over and over, and also to be open that there are undiscovered facts. One of the common problems that we had at the African burial ground was while there were literally thousands of students from surrounding New York area, from elementary school through Fordham University, Columbia University students, people would come in and look around when we were doing lab tours and basically images of the photos from the excavation at 6 World Trade Center. And they would say, wow, this is really interesting, but my professor says there's not enough information for me to write a paper on this or to work on my master's degree. And that is just untrue. There are so many undiscovered aspects of Africans in New York in particular. And I like to say, especially to an audience like this, if all of you were to stop doing whatever you're doing right now and focused on nothing but the African presence in our lifetimes, I don't believe we'd have time to actually cover everything that there is out there.
Yeah. And thinking about that Peter Weisenberger clip in the context of Juneteenth, is there a risk that talking about the end of slavery in too simplistic a way to honor this holiday suggests that there was an end to the problem? And so maybe we need to talk about Juneteenth in an evolving way that maybe people haven't even talked, not that I know how everybody celebrated Juneteenth, but Dr. Wilson, I wonder if you think that it needs to be this sort of unfolding conversation.
Well, I definitely think that it is an open-ended conversation. As an African American, and I heard this for 12 and a half years and continue here today, one of the major issues that people will say, particularly the older the person is, the burial ground is so important to me because until it was rediscovered, people would say Africans came here from the South when the crops were failing and the Klan was on the rise. No one thought of Africans as the founders, among the founding fathers of New Amsterdam and New York. And that is our true place in history, which again has been neglected. So I think, again, we can have Juneteenth celebrations from now on because there are so many ways to have them in terms of lectures, radio shows, television shows, things other than simply having another barbecue on June 19th, which many people associate, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But our history is no less important and valuable than the history of other Americans.
Now, later today, folks, if you happen to be in the area at the African Burial Ground National Monument, which is 290 Broadway in Lower Manhattan. Both Cheryl Wilson and Kenneth C. Davis will be delivering lectures to commemorate Juneteenth. Ken Davis will be speaking at 1 o'clock. Cheryl Wilson will be speaking at 6:30 p.m. Can you give like a 15-second preview?
I think the preview in part is provided by Monticello this past week. They just opened up Sally Hemings's room adjacent to Thomas Jefferson's bedroom. I don't know of a more perfect way to put a bow on it than that. Juneteenth is not just a feel-good moment to have red soda and barbecue, but to recognize that the hard history of slavery means that this institution, these millions of people, were part of American history. They were part of the wealth and the power of America from its beginnings, and that's what we're still contending with today because, as Faulkner said, the past is never really past.
And Dr. Wilson, for the sake of potential future visitors, what can they find at the African Burial Ground National Monument?
Well, there is art that commemorates the New York African presence, as well as a visitor center where you may see artifacts, replicas of artifacts from the burial ground itself, and get tours from the rangers and guides there on the history of the African presence in New York in the context of the African burial ground.
Cheryl Wilson, urban anthropologist, former director of the Office of Public Education and Interpretation at the New York African Burial Ground Project, professor at Manhattan College, and author of New York City's Black Slave Owners, A Social and Material Culture History, and Kenneth C. Davis, author of books including In the Shadow of Liberty, The Hidden History of Slavery, 4 Presidents and 5 Black Lives. Thank you both so much.
A pleasure.
And thanks to all of your audience for coming to the Green Space today.